Hello, listeners. It's Beaches here. We have some fantastic and amazing people in the booth with us. You guys hopefully remember Gus from our opening.
Yep, I'm back.
And we're here with the delightful Kristen, Dr. Kristen Stubbs.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
And we're going to talk about whatever Kristen wants to talk about, really. So, Gus, why don't you, let's go.
Yeah. Okay, so Kristen, I was wondering if you could just give us a little bit of your background and how you ended up at Hope this year.
So let's see. I am a sex geek. I'm a queer, sex-positive entrepreneur and toy maker, and I've done a lot of work involving what I like to call, culture hacking kind of around sex and sexuality. So how do we help make our culture more sex positive, have less shame around sex and sexuality? And I've done some hacking myself. I've built an award-winning light-up dildo called the Hammer, which some folks may have seen on the internet. It's just beautiful. So I've kind of come from a tech background of robotics. I'm now doing this work with sexuality. I've got a lot of friends who've been coming to Hope for years, and it was like, oh, yes, I will go. I will see this Hope of which you speak. And, so I was excited to pitch my talk and have the opportunity to share my experiences with folks here.
Yeah, and how's your experience at Hope been so far?
Overall, it's been pretty good. I am certainly no stranger to being in a minority at conferences. So I come from academia, where even in robotics, there's still not a lot of women, not a lot of gender diversity. This is definitely a little more extreme version of that. There certainly are, and I've had friends tell me, this is so much better than it used to be. But definitely someone like me, raised as a woman, like there are not a ton of us. I did get to check out a meetup yesterday, which was really great. Got to meet other folks. And that was good. It was a nice reminder. It's like, oh, I am not the only person here in a skirt. That's fantastic. But yeah, generally people have been really cool to me. I've enjoyed just getting to walk around, getting to meet people, kind of see what's going on. And it's been a lot of fun so far.
That's fantastic. How did you switch from academia and your doctorate and stuff into inventing the hammer?
Oh, man. So, I was doing a lot of work. So academia, I was doing a lot of work in robotics education. So trying to get kids excited about science and technology through robotics. And that's what I was doing as a postdoc. I was then hired by iRobot. So those are the folks that do the Roomba robotic vacuum cleaner, to do their educational outreach program. And I was doing that for almost 2 years. And the corporate grind was starting to wear on me. I was getting really frustrated that they said they wanted to do a lot of cool things and I wasn't getting resources to do them. And it just really wore me out. And so I took a break and I started thinking about, what was I really sort of passionate about in life? And really, I like sex. I like sex a lot. That's just how it is. And when I thought about, what am I going to do with the knowledge that I have and the opportunities that I have, there are actually a lot of people out there doing amazing work with kids and robots. Like, it's great. I think that's fantastic. But there's already a lot of people doing it. And so I've got a lot of privilege, my background, being well-educated, all these things. And I thought, where can I make a bigger impact? And I feel like in terms of human sexuality and encouraging people to have sort of healthy experiences, helping people have the kinds of experiences they want to have, rather than empowering students with technology to get into science and education, it was like, oh, well, I actually want to empower adults with technology to have the kinds of experiences they want to have. And so I feel like that's an area where I can hopefully make a bigger impact. And so that was what helped change my mind, was looking at what was I really passionate about and how was I going to be able to make a bigger difference in the world.
But how did you even take that first step from, because you're in academia, you worked for iRobot and stuff, and you just, you said you really like sex and enjoy this kind of sex positive culture.
Yeah.
But how did you make that first leap into?
Yeah. So for me, I started out writing. I wanted to share some of my experiences. So I grew up in the Midwest in a very conservative, religious family who I love. We have some philosophical differences, like you do. And so the first thing to me was to just start talking about, my early experiences and some of the things that I had found really challenging, really frustrating, the shame and things that I dealt with growing up. And I just wanted to tell people. I just wanted to put that out there and be like, hey, this was my experience. What was your experience? And so I started a blog just in time for Ars Electronica, which is a sex tech conference organized by Monochrome and Johannes, who is a frequent Hope attendee and an all-around hilarious person. So he's been organizing that. So I tell him, you know, his conference changed my life. Like when Ars, when I heard about Ars Electronica, I was like, oh, well, I was thinking about starting a blog. I guess I better get that blog started before I go to the sex conference so I can talk about something with people. And that's how I got started. I started writing and sharing stories, and that was pretty well received, and I felt good talking about kind of where I'd come from and hearing where other people had come from. And then I was also getting involved with a makerspace in Boston called Artisans Asylum, doing volunteer work with them. And it took me a while, and then I finally, like, I was like, you know, because everybody's making things, we've got, you know, wood shop and welding and all this stuff, and I was like, what am I going to do? And finally I was like, oh, sex toys. That's what I want to make, right? You've got this amazing, you know, makerspace. You could make anything. And I was like, oh, I'm going to make sex toys. And so then I started making toys. And that kind of bridge, first the writing and then starting to actually make physical things and share them with people and be like, yeah, you can make things. You can make hilariously geeky, sexy things. And it's just fun. And that, yeah, everything kind of snowballed after that.
And was the reception to that well, or did you kind of face the stigma of... from your peers, especially in academia and stuff, of,
oh,
she's diverting from the path of doing stuff in the desert,
so,
creating.
Yeah. So I have not made a huge point. I am still in the process of coming out to a lot of my colleagues in robotics. I don't hide what I do. You know, if you Google my name, Kristen Stubbs, you will absolutely find my sex toys, and that is fine with me. So I don't hide what I do, but I didn't really make a point of like announcing to everybody, hey, this is what I'm doing now, in part because I'm working on a startup. You know, I didn't want to just be vaporware. Like I wanted to have a business going and then be able to point people. So kind of slowly but surely I've told one of my thesis advisors who was amazing. He was so cool with it. He's like, oh, all right. You know, oh, yeah, sensing. Yeah, sensing is going to be a difficult problem. That, you know, like he just ran with it. He's an amazing guy. And my other friends, I mean, coming out about anything is always a challenge, right? And as I started telling my friends that I met in grad school and from academia, my closest friends, they were totally cool with it. And I was like, oh, right. Because I choose great friends, right? I hang out with cool people. And so when I tell them I'm doing something kind of off the wall, they're pretty cool with it. And so, you know, so far, the folks who I have been telling have generally rolled with the punches. And they're like, yeah, okay. You know, how's it going? You know, and then at some point later, I will, you know, update Facebook and LinkedIn with my company or however that's going. And we'll see. Certainly one of my colleagues, so generally it's been good. One of my colleagues, there was a guy I was working on a robotics startup with for a little bit, and I had to do the like business breakup, and I wasn't really sure how to do that. I actually went online and like Googled how do you break up with someone. And so they were like, you know, do it in person, like make sure you have an escape route, you know, like come right to the point. So I went over to this dude's house and I was like, hey, you know, I've enjoyed working with you, but I've realized like the sex positive work is really where I need to be. And he just looked at me and he's like, what are you going to do with your PhD? Right? I spent like 5 years doing all this crazy robotics, hard, you know, academic research and writing papers and doing conferences and all that stuff. And it's like, you know, what I got out of my PhD was I did get a lot of connections, a lot of networking. I met a lot of cool people, and I learned how to run projects, right? I learned how to do work. I learned how to organize my thinking and how to solve problems. And I can take that anywhere. And so I don't consider it a waste of time. It's certainly helpful to have some extra tech credentials, certainly when I'm talking to folks, you know, very tech savvy folks, I'm being able to be like, yeah, no, I actually know something about what I'm talking about, even if I'm in a different domain than my thesis.
So ideally, in 10 years from now, where would you see yourself with your kind of company and your startup, and what would be your ideal situation?
Oh, man. So I'm actually looking at forming a nonprofit now to provide resources to folks who are doing sex positive work, whether it's, you know, filmmaking or educators or authors, crafters, sort of small businesses. I would love to see that be like, you know, like a household name, at least in the sex positive world, and for to have, you know, given it, like helped people raise and given away, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and reached like hundreds of thousands of people through sex positive projects. Like that to me would be amazing. Like that's, you know, when I started making toys, I was like, yeah, I'm going to manufacture a toy. That would be great. And it's like, yeah, okay, I could take my glowing toy. I could get it manufactured. But that's only going to appeal to some people. You know, there's going to be budgetary constraints. Not everybody's going to be able to afford to buy a glowing toy. But if I can help empower, you know, all the other people out there, the great sex geeks doing amazing education and sex positive work, and help them reach their audiences and reach more people and do more things, that I think will really hopefully have a bigger impact on our culture and advancing sex positivity and consent culture.
No, it definitely wouldn't, especially as you said, not many people could afford your glowing toy, but if you could actually make these changes in kind of our sex culture, it'd be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
What do you view as being like the biggest problems in the current sex culture?
So there's kind of a network of things, and I'll be talking more about these in my talk later tonight at Hope, but certainly sort of sex negativity. There's a lot of shame and stigma around sex. You know, rape culture, sort of violence perpetrated against women and other folks, sexual violence in particular, like that's just not cool. Crappy sex ed. Oh my gosh. I had virtually
no sex ed.
Yeah. You know, it's like, no, we want to see sex education for young people that is age appropriate, that is not judgmental, that is, you know, includes, people who are homosexual, queer, trans, whatever. Those are some of the things that I find really frustrating. And so I think the more people who are willing to stand up and be like, why, yes, I like sex. You know, here are some of the positive and negative experiences I have had. You know, people sharing their knowledge, sharing good information. And fortunately, there are a number of like great, there's so many folks out there doing good work. I'll be linking to a lot of those on my blog with my slides. But, you know, more of that. We need more good information, less stigma, and that's, I think, a good starting point.
It definitely would be, and especially I know from my own experiences that in my sex ed, it was kind of sex is evil, abstinence, 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 abstinence.
Yeah.
And they didn't touch on the queer folk, homosexuals, or any sort of other sexual minority. And it was just kind of, you're going to get an STD if you have sex, or it's a terrible thing.
Right.
You're going to go blind, you're going to grow hair on your palms, and all these kind of scare tactics. When in fact,
yeah,
it should be a happy,
not helpful. Yeah,
experience.
I mean, the data, you know, scientific studies have shown, I believe there are a number of studies who have shown that abstinence only education is just not effective. It's just not. And I really feel it does young people a disservice not to give them honest, accurate, non-judgmental information about their sexuality.
Yeah, no, I mean, the current status quo is everything is judgmental, especially in the cities it gets a little bit better, but I grew up in a kind of rural farm community, so it was still that scare tactics going on.
Yep.
So what has the response been to just kind of in your family and the people back in the Midwest? Like, do they know what you're doing right now? Or
To varying degrees. So I have a younger sister, and she knows about everything, and she is totally cool and supportive, and that's fantastic. I love her to death. She's an amazing person. So she's been super supportive. I actually just recently showed my parents the hammer, my glowing sex toy. They were up visiting, and that actually went as well as it possibly could have gone. You know, it was because the way we deal with awkward things in my family is we just don't talk about them. So it was kind of like, hey, you know, I would kind of like to show you this thing that I made. And, you know, it was a little odd. But, you know, they were like, oh, OK, you know, that's nice, hon. And then, you know, we've never spoken about it again. And that's all right. it's one of these things where I'm not interested in trying to push what I do onto my family or onto people who really aren't interested.
Yeah, well, that goes against kind of everything you're kind of teaching.
You know, I will let people know. It's the same thing around my makerspace, right? If I'm running around with a toy I just made, be like, oh my gosh, you guys, look what I did a thing, you know? And I look to somebody, and if they're kind of like a little hesitant, it's not their thing, I'm like, oh, no big deal. I will go find someone else. You know, that's fine. So yeah, like maybe at some point I will be talking more to folks in my family about what I do. But at this point, it's kind of the same thing with my colleagues from academia. Mm-hmm. It's like I want to be I don't want to be vaporware. Like, I really want to be up and established and doing what I want to do. And then at that point, you know, we'll see where I'm at. It's there's a metaphor that's used sometimes folks with disabilities. I have fibromyalgia syndrome, which is characterized by chronic pain and fatigue, and it limits a lot of the things that I can do. And so one of the analogies people use is say, well, yeah, you have so many spoons. Like, every day you kind of wake up, you open your drawer, and you have so many spoons. And every time you do something that requires physical or emotional energy, that uses up spoons. And so for me, just trying to get up and do my startup and meet people and get things done, like, that uses a lot of spoons. And so I don't necessarily have a lot of spoons left to deal with my family. Like, bless their hearts, they're great, but, you know, I have to really pick and choose my battles and figure out where my energy is going. And so, yeah, for right now, it's a lot of just trying to push forward and keep my business moving, you know, little steps at a time. And yeah, we'll see where that adds up.
So, how many toys have you created? Is it just the hammer, or do you have
a myriad of... So my first one, actually, my first silicone casting project, I made a copy of my favorite dildo, and I suspended a little tiny TARDIS inside because I'm a Doctor Who fan. That got some great play on the internet. That was hilarious. So that was my first one. I've done the hammer. Those are the ones that I've blogged about the most. So my goal is to make a sex toy or piece of BDSM equipment using every workshop at my hackerspace. So I have made, we have a lamp glass working. So I have made little tiny Barbie scale dildos, glass dildos. That was really fun. A friend of mine had an idea, and we prototyped out a movable type paddle. So, you know, you can buy paddles with words on them and hit people with, you know, hit consenting people with them and leave marks in the shapes of those words. Well, why would you print just one word on someone where you could swap out the letters and print different words on them?
Yeah, you could print a book on them.
Yeah, give or take. Enough time. So that's, I have an early prototype of that. It definitely needs more work. But, you know, what else have I done? Yeah, just lots of random stuff. I screen printed my own shirt. Sex positive shirt, things like that. So it's I'm not doing as much making lately, in part because I'm putting so much energy into the startup, but I really love, you know, being in an awesome community and having so many people who are very excited and willing to help and willing to teach. And so, you know, anything I get the chance to work on is just a lot of fun.
It sounds like it. I mean, it sounds like the perfect job.
I am very blessed. I'm very fortunate. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your startup. What's the situation with that?
So my original idea was, several years ago when I was first prototyping the hammer and I was like, oh, what if I want to get this manufactured? Wouldn't it be great to crowdfund? And at that time, the big name crowdfunding sites were taking down sex toys. Like, you just could not put a sex toy on Kickstarter, Indiegogo, they would take it down. And I knew people who had run into that problem. And so I was like, okay, If I'm going to do this. So I'm going to have to build my own sex positive crowdfunding site. And so that's what I started to build. I'm like, so, you know, I've been working on that a couple years, and, you know, you keep working, you know, doing the incorporation and working with a lawyer and working with, you know, developers and trying to get all that done. And that, you know, and there I am with my yak out in the middle of nowhere. And I realized that I had basically fallen in love with my yak, right? So this idea that rather than just making a toy and manufacturing it, that really through the crowd, you know, as I talked to more sex geeks, more people who could use, you know, needed funds and could use fundraising services, that really what I wanted to be doing was supporting those people. And so now I am looking at kind of pivoting and relaunching my startup as a nonprofit. And so instead of crowdfunding, we'll basically be doing kind of crowd-directed grant making. So instead of, you know, so all the stuff you have to fill out on a normal site to do a crowdfunding campaign, that will become your grant application. If you're in line with our mission, if you're sex positive, et cetera, you know, you run your fundraising campaign and people donate their money to our nonprofit, and then we re-grant it to the people who need the money. So it makes some of the finance piece work a little easier because... The nitty-gritty of trying to get crowdfunding working, it's not trivial. It's not trivial. It's a total pain in the butt. And the financial system is just not very sex positive, I have to say. So, So yeah, I'm now looking at revamping as a nonprofit, and that's exciting. It's now like my to-do list has now, you know, gotten exponentially longer. But I think overall this is going to be the right way to go. And this is a story that I really liked. I feel much more comfortable in some ways telling the story of, yes, we're raising money to help people who are doing good sex positive work so we can have an even larger impact on our society.
And definitely. What type of sex positive work would you consider to be the kind of starting point for
you? Well, let's see. So I've been talking to a number of folks. Let's see. Courtney Trouble is a queer award-winning feminist pornographer. She's indicated she would like to put some movies on and work with me and do some fundraising there. I also I know educators. Trying to think. It's like, off the top of my head, like Tristan Taramino is a huge one. But there are a number of folks who, you know, would like to do speaking tours, or they need funds so they can actually get a book together without having to put in a big upfront investment, mm-hmm. things like that. So, you know, we're looking for people who are doing, you know, good, kind of inclusive work. Yeah, whether it's, you know, it's filmmaking or toys or, you know, speaking tours or, you know, I think... The goal is to be, you know, open and inclusive of a wide variety of potential projects, you know, whether it's theater performance or storytelling series or, you know, whatever. But just trying to give those folks more visibility and a platform that is explicitly designed for them, you know, rather than having to look at terms of service that aren't really good and, you know, kind of like, okay, you know, how can we make this work? How do I have to change my project? You know, it's like, no. We're going to design this site. You know, this nonprofit is going to be, you know, and we're going to be upfront with everybody with, you know, I'm very upfront with generally everybody I work with about what I do, why I'm doing it. And so to have a platform for these folks, I think will be really valuable. And so far the feedback I've been getting from people has been really positive.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to promote this sex-positive culture, different people respond in different ways. So just covering the whole broad spectrum of things, I mean, someone might respond better to a video and other people with the kind of theater and the talks and that type of stuff. So then it can kind of promote your mission statement of just promoting a sex-positive culture. Mm-hmm. What is a sex-positive culture to you? Because everybody seems to kind of have different
idea of it. The best description I have seen of it, so Cliff Provocracy is a friend of mine and blogger who does a lot of amazing work, and they have done some writing about that. And so some of the things that come to mind kind of based off of their definition is sort of celebrating the joy of sex, that sex is a normal thing, it's natural, acknowledging that some people are not into it. There are asexual folk, and that is totally cool. But, you know, just celebrating that it's a good thing. It's fun. Like, everybody can, you know, that wants to enjoy sex should be able to do that. Also, I think another important aspect of sex-positive culture is consent culture. So the idea that you want a sexual experience between, you know, however many people, you want everybody to be enthusiastically, like, expressing their consent. Like, yeah, this is what I want to do. Unfortunately, our culture right now, like, I can't stand watching a lot of romantic comedies because there's a lot of this, like, you know, the man and the woman looking meaningfully at each other. Are they going to kiss? Are they not going to kiss? It's like all this weird, like, people sort of trying to guess what the other person is thinking or what they want to do. And it's like, no. I'm in favor of explicit communication. Tell the other person what you're interested in. Ask what they are interested in. You know, see where you get that sort of enthusiastic, oh, yes, let's do this thing. Promoting that.
Just have the open lines of dialogue. Because, I mean, during any sexual experience, in order for it to be truly... spectacular. I mean,
communication is,
oh no, I don't like that.
That
instead
yeah.
of just sitting
oh
there
do more of this like do yeah like oh I'm not as much into that, could you do this other thing, like, or even just like, you know, yeah, what do you feel like right now, how about this, do you feel like, oh yeah. There's a guy named, let's see if I can find it, he gave this, there's a great TED talk on finding a better analogy for sex, and I thought I had a link to it here. Yes. Okay. So Al Vernaccio gave a great TED talk called Sex Needs a New Metaphor. Here's one. And he talks about moving away from the baseball metaphor to pizza, right? Because in baseball, you've got sort of scoring, and it's like this game, and you're trying to get to a certain base, and it has this sort of implied sort of antagonistic relationship between the parties. And Al is advocating for the metaphor of sex, like ordering pizza. So you go, hey, do you feel like pizza tonight? And maybe the other person's like, yeah, I feel like pizza. Okay, great. So then you talk about what you want to have on your pizza. You know, do you feeling like pepperoni or cheese or maybe half and half? We're gonna do part one thing, part another thing. Some people are not into pizza. That's also totally fine. Mm-hmm. So really moving to something where you're talking more explicit negotiation, more communication, and it's just a fun thing. You know, people can be like, oh, no, I don't really feel like pizza today. I mean, you know, I just had pizza. Maybe pizza tomorrow. You know, moving towards, I think, those kinds of metaphors is kind of another great way to talk about sort of sex-positive culture and what, you know, kind of some of the things that I would like to see. But absolutely, like, enthusiastic consent, lots of communication, you know, basically adults, you know, talking together, negotiating, doing what they want to do, having the kinds of experiences that they want to have. And, you know, people recognizing that, yeah, that's okay. You know, having sex is natural. It's fun. You know, you want to make sure people have information so they can utilize safer sex practices so that they understand the risks involved in whatever they're doing. You know, so that people have all the information, they have good information, and they can make informed decisions about their sex lives and what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And would that also include, like, the destigmatization of, like, paraphilias and stuff? Because it seems like there's a huge...
It's
with people with different fetishes and stuff.
Right, right. So the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom, which is an organization I've supported, they have done a lot of work towards destigmatizing kink. And so a lot of some of those things, especially with regard to like BDSM, those are like now no longer in the DSM, the diagnostic manual that mm-hmm. psychologists and psychiatrists use. Part of the challenge of this is just With a thing like a paraphilia, you have to, it kind of, and again, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, you know, I am not a doctor, that I am not that kind of professional. My understanding is that a lot of it comes down to, is the person themselves, like, are they harming themselves for other people? Is this mm-hmm. something that is a concern to them? Because if they feel like I have a problem, then, you know, if they want to get help, absolutely, then, you know, they should look at getting help. But for people who it's like, if you're, you know, a foot fetishist and you find partners who are also into that, and that is, you know, you negotiate and that is what you were all excited about doing, then like more power to you. I don't, no, not my business. Like whatever y'all want
to do. So basically just comes down to that enthusiastic consent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looking at, you know, reducing harm, making sure everybody's risk aware and having enthusiastic consent.
Yeah. The enthusiastic consent and just the open lines of dialogue. I know from my own personal experiences, sometimes you want that because it's like, ooh, do they like this? Do they like that? Oh,
yeah,
no.
Right.
They just winced, but now they're like, oh, no, why'd you stop? And I mean, just speaking and talking about it is the mm-hmm. most important thing, especially if it's going to be a pleasurable experience. And that's what it comes down to. I mean, it's a fantastic experience. It can be a very emotional, and it can also just be a physical experience. But
yep.
you need to just discuss and talk with your partners about what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
What to do.
Yeah, and again, I don't think that is something that is really modeled very well in popular culture. Like, people just don't see very many examples of that.
No, and as you're saying in the movies, I mean, it's
oh
they give
gosh.
A sultry look, and then they're pushed against the wall, and they're making out. And it's
just like, okay. You know, and certainly as you establish a relationship with someone, sort of what enthusiastic consent looks like, you know, might well change over time. You'll sort of establish relationships with people and you'll have understandings. But yeah, especially when you're first getting started or you're first meeting someone and kind of figuring out what you all are interested in, like, oh gosh, yes, talking is a thing. Use your words.
Yeah, and there's that stigma against saying like, oh, can I kiss you? You're just supposed to know like, oh, they gave this glance and
yeah, what?
Yeah.
No, I'm not a mind. Oh God, like I'm not a mind reader. It's pet peeves about popular culture. Oh my gosh, it's a huge one. So yeah, I actually, I don't watch a lot of popular romantic comedies. It's just like no. I just sit there the whole time and I'm like, you talking? Where were you? Were you going to talk about that? How did you decide that? It seems like. I honestly feel like better communication would solve like 90% of the problems in like most popular culture yeah. stories, especially romantic comedies. It's like, have you tried just asking him what he was thinking or asking her?
Yeah, instead of going through this long, convoluted plan.
Right.
Of, whatever.
Just, you know, I think it's like,
hey, do you want to go out on a date?
It's like looking at a lot of like older movies and being like, man, you know, if they had had cell phones, this would not have been a problem. And today it's like, mm-hmm. well, if you guys, you have your cell phones, if you would be using them, if you would be talking, things would probably be going better. Yeah. So, you know, trying to find, you know, find these people who are like Cliff, like Al, who are writing about these things, who are giving people better examples, illustrating that you know, enthusiastic consent can be really hot, really sexy, really fun. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, it does. I think some people, you know, it might feel like a burden to some people, like, oh man, I got to do what now? We're going to, that doesn't sound, no. It's like, you can have so much fun with enthusiastic consent and be like, hey, I was, you know, today I was thinking about such and such, you know, what do you think about that? I mean, like, there's so many ways that you can actually have fun with it. And then you're incorporating communication. You're figuring out what everybody wants. You can figure out sort of what's going to be your pizza order. And then you can go for it. And yeah, keeping those lines of communication open, checking in with folks. That's, I think those are key things. And yeah, that's the type of environment that I would really love to see. And there are so many people, you know, working towards that. And I hope, you know, through my work, through this nonprofit, we'll be able to really amplify that and carry that message further.
Definitely. Where do you think these apps fit into it? I mean, there's apps for like, for homosexual and like bi people, questioning people. There's Grindr, there's Tinder for kind of everybody. And I've noticed that on these apps, like, people will discuss things more openly as opposed to kind of in the real world where no one will ask you, what are you into? What do you like to do?
Oh, that's interesting. So I'm afraid I don't have any experience with those apps myself. I mean, you know, like, kind of like with anything, if people understand sort of what they want, what they're looking to get, if this is something that makes people more willing to talk, I'm tempted to say that's a good thing. You know, I think with casual encounters, to me, I'm always like, hey, are people aware of safer sex practices? Because I think that's really important for people to at least know and be able to decide sort of what they're comfortable with. You know, how you know, what's their testing status? You know, how's that, your STI testing, how's that going? But yeah, certainly, the internet tends to be a place where people feel more comfortable talking about these kinds of things. What I have found is that by being this open about what I do, I mean, like, I totally have the reputation at my makerspace. It's like, oh, hey, that's the woman who makes sex toys, you know? And so, yeah, then people will come up to me and ask me questions about things, maybe about toys, maybe about something more personal. And, you know, they're generally very nice and respectful about it. And I'm excited, you know, I'm excited to be able to help. And I feel like, you know, the more people who start to feel more comfortable talking, whether it's online or in real life, that, like, people notice. Like, people will then start to kind of pay attention and feel like there's someone they can go to if they do have a question, you know, that they have somebody they can ask. So, yeah, that's one of the things I have really appreciated about being able to be as open and as out about what I do, is that, you know, then people know that I'm a good resource, you know, and they're willing to come and talk to me. And I'm honored, you know, when someone comes to me with a personal question, or, hey, they're interested in making a sex toy, you know, where can they get body safe silicone? You know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I'm thrilled. Like, I'm,
have you noticed a lot of people at your makerspace kind of starting to make toys and experiment around with the different,
Definitely. So, well, part of it is, right, my sample size is biased. Like, because people know this is what I do, they are more likely to, like, show me their toy or tell me about their project. I actually started and I run a meetup group for sex kink positive makers. So at my makerspace, like, every other month, we have somebody come in, they talk about their project, and then we just kind of hang out. People talk, brainstorm ideas for different projects they want to do. They share experiences, they ask questions. And that's been really cool. So, you know, facilitating these kind of in-person meetups, I think, is a really great way to, you know, meet collaborators, you know, ask questions you aren't sure where else to ask. And that's been really cool. Yeah, that's called Teasecraft, and teasecraft.com is actually where folks can go for more information on running that kind of a meetup. But yeah, it's been a blast.
And it furthers the dialogue about this kind of sex positive culture. And I can imagine just, like, at your makerspace, people being, they know that you make your toys and stuff, and then them going home and saying, hey, you'll never guess what I saw today at the makerspace.
Oh,
and so
yeah,
it's just kind of reverberating beyond that, kind of like the ripple effect. And so they'll probably start talking to their partners a little bit more and say, hey, well, I saw her with the hammer today, and What do you think about that? What's your... And so definitely just by being there and being so open about it furthers the dialogue, just not necessarily in your immediate surroundings, but kind of...
Yeah, that's my hope.
Outward.
That's my hope. Like, that's one of the reasons why, you know, I started doing what I'm doing is like, yeah, no, I'm gonna make my weird, bizarro, hilarious sex toys and I'm gonna put them out there. And yeah, I like to make people laugh. I like to make people think. I've had someone come to me and ask me some questions and then they went off and made their own toy and I've featured that on my blog. Like, it's great. Like, being able to hopefully help inspire people, to educate them, to try to point them to all the other cool people who are doing work in this space. It's really been, it's been a privilege. It's been an honor. I'm so thankful to be able to do what I do.
And it sounds like you're really enjoying what you're doing as well.
Oh yeah, man. I'm so thankful. I'm like, my life is awesome. I'm so thankful. I'm surrounded by amazing, supportive friends, my husband, you know, my sister. Like, there's a lot of people that I'm grateful to. It's not always easy. Like, my therapist would say, yes, you have a great life, but you worked really hard for it. So I'm like, I worked really hard. it wasn't always easy. But I'm working hard. I'm trying to do the best that I can to help, yeah, promote sex positivity and, yeah, like I say, leave the world at least a little better, more fun, potentially more orgasmic place than when I came into it.
And we have a question from Going to Axiom. They ask, what do you think about the teledildonics as an industry?
Ah, okay. So for folks who don't know, teledildonics is the idea of kind of remote sexual encounters. So you've got people in two different places who are generally using some kind of machine kind of interface between them to have some kind of sexual experience. Oh yeah, teledildonics is great. It's really interesting because it's actually, people have been working with that idea for quite a long time, actually. Like, as soon as you had like the internet, you had people trying to have sex with each other over the internet. So I think that, you know, I think we're going to continue to see more of that. I've been really excited to be involved in kind of the DIY sex toy movement over the last few years, because as sensing and processing becomes so cheap, it is easier than ever to, you know, come up with cool instrumented toys that report things. The PSI Gasm project was one presented to Ars Electronica, like an instrumented butt plug you could use to kind of measure orgasm, arousal, and response curves. Dr. Extreme is launching a Kickstarter right now for the Ambrosia Vibe, which is a strap-on that can respond to rhythmic touching, either like stroking or sucking. You can stroke or suck on it, and then it's got like a pressure sensor, and that controls a little bullet vibe. So you can actually have the wearer experience sensation. And that's something you could totally, you know, hook up and run over the internet and have, you know, have people, two people playing with them in different places and kind of getting that stimulation. Yeah, that's a great question. So I think we're only going to see more of that. There are certainly some commercial products. I don't think we've had any that have been just amazing, wonderful success stories to date. And it's hard, right? Because a sexual experience with another person in person has so many components, right? There's all this touch and scent and sight and feel, and that is just so hard to replicate. And there was actually a talk last year at Ars Electronica on, or last year, 2 years ago, on like how much bandwidth would you need to like... take all that sort of sensory information and push it to somebody else. It's a lot. So it's a hard problem, but I think we are going to continue to see folks either in the DIY community or sort of getting out into industry making those sorts of toys. So yeah, keep your eyes open. Like, I think we're only going to see more of that. And that, to me, like, not just teledildonics, but having sex toys that actually respond to the person who's wearing them or using them, I think we're going to see a lot more of that, and that is really awesome. Like, right now, a lot of sex toys are just an open loop. Like, I have a vibrator. I turn it on. The vibrator has no idea what's going on. It has no idea whether I like what it's doing, you know, like the speed, don't like the speed, whatever. So as we see, I think, more sort of sensing and getting more of, like, a closed loop on some of these toys and have them really, you know, we're starting to see a little of that now, but I think we're just going to see more of it. And that's exciting to me. That's a lot of fun. There's so many great, like, great sex geeks in the world, like people that are starting to play with this stuff. It is fantastic. I'm like, this is the best time to be alive if you're doing DIY like sex toys and stuff, because all that kind of hacking is becoming easier and easier and more people get to play with it, and that's just fantastic. Yeah, thanks so much for the question.
Any other questions from anyone? Or So what is the DIY industry? Are you more focused on the makerspace stuff, or is it just people at home doing these things to create toys for their benefit or others' benefit?
I'm trying to think. So I guess it's kind of a mix. So I'm trying to think. You know, a lot of folks that I have run into that do this, it is kind of a private thing. You know, they maybe have some background in electronics or robotics, and so they're going to start looking around. You know, I get parts from Adafruit here in New York. I love them. So, you know, they're looking at Adafruit and SparkFun, you know, seeing what sensors can I get for cheap? Is this something I can control with my Arduino or my Raspberry Pi? And it's challenging right now because there is not one place to go to find good tutorials on how to do these things. They're kind of spread out in random places on the internet. If you're familiar with Instructables.com, that's a great site to learn how to make almost anything. We don't really have that for kind of the sex positive community. That's something I would love for my nonprofit to do at some point. Because I think just getting people kind of basic tutorials, a lot of these things are not that hard. There's several people who have made small boards that you can use to connect like a vibrator to something like an Arduino. Dr. Extreme has one called the Hack Off. It is actually really easy to program a vibrator like with a custom pattern. You know, combine that with all the other sensors and shields you can put on an Arduino, like you can do all kinds of crazy teledildonic stuff if you want, or remote control. But it's hard to find like good tutorials. It's hard to know where to go. And so I think that's part of the reason why you get a lot of kind of individuals kind of hanging out, because people don't know sort of who else is working on these things. They don't necessarily know kind of where else to turn. And so by being able to have an in-person meetup that I really try to advertise to the maker community, then people start to figure out, they kind of come together, they can pool their resources and figure out, well, hey, I don't know about this, but I think that person knows something about this. Or like, I haven't done much work with electronics, but this person has. That's really helpful, because otherwise information can, unfortunately, again, because there's such a stigma about it, this kind of information is really hard to find. You can't put things like this up on Instructables.
Yeah. And is there any place that people can get like a kit to like get started in this, and like just an all-inclusive kit?
The Hack Off with Dr. Extreme, which if you search for Dr. Extreme on Google, you'll find it. That's where his is. That's the one I know off the top of my head. For just getting started with Arduino and programming, I'd recommend Adafruit has a great, Adafruit.com, I think, has a great Arduino kit. And yeah, if you're interested in reading more stories, I've got some small how-tos on my blog. That's toymakerproject.com.
Alrighty, well, I think that's all we have time for. Thank you for being here, Dr. Kristen Stubbs, and we're looking forward to your talk later.
Thanks very much.